What's up, everybody? It's Noah Alvarez here, joined alongside Javier Lopez, and we are the Off the Horns podcast. We're up on SoundCloud.com, also on Spotify, where you're covering your Los Angeles Rams out of here on Orange County. We're also on the Pulse Podcast Network, so shout out to them for putting us on. And yeah, what an exciting championship
weekend
it was.
Shout out to our sponsors.
Yeah, shout out to our sponsors. Shout out to JJ, Generic Sports, for instrumental playing in the background. But man, what an NFC championship it was last weekend. I know I was watching the game with you, and we'll dive into like the scores and so much, but wow, like holy shit, what a stress-filled game.
Yeah, that was a really stressful game, and a lot of mixed emotions and anxiety, but glad we came out on the right side of the...
Yeah, both games last weekend were super good, and they both went to overtime, and I just remember watching the game with your family, and there were so many times where we were just jumping out of our seats, like, we couldn't just imagine what happened. I mean, that was a really exciting game. The Rams come out on top, 26-23 over the New Orleans Saints in the NFC Championship game. They needed overtime to do so, but the Rams got off to a slow start. It was 13-0. I kind of showed up late, and it was already 13-0 early in the second quarter, and it seemed like the Rams had got off to a really bad start.
Yeah, it looked like we were starting off on a rough patch, but I kind of had a feeling, like, in the back of my head, I feel like, okay, it's like the Saints-Eagles game the week before. Like, the Eagles jumped in front 14-0, and then, like, the Saints sort of had, like,
the comeback,
to get their little, how to get their feet wet, like, at the beginning, and, like, shake the rust off, and then they ended up, like, shutting them down the rest of the game, and I had a feeling like we were going to do that too. So I knew it was still early at the beginning of the game when we were down 13-0, but yeah, like, it was kind of a horrible nightmare start with the interception and everything.
Yeah, the Rams were pretty lucky that the Saints didn't go for touchdowns. I mean, they had that drop in the end zone.
Yeah,
I heard that over the radio, and I was just thinking, man, that's, you know, three is huge compared to seven. So that definitely helped the Rams. And then also that fake punt, and then to drive down and get that field. It was only a field goal, but the Rams getting that field goal, making it 13-3 instead of 13-0. I mean, that was pretty huge, too. That fake punt definitely turned it around a lot.
Yeah, definitely. I liked the defense at the beginning of the game, stopping them and holding them in the red zone both times, keeping them at 6 points. And, yeah, Johnny Hecker came clutch with the special teams play. Shout out John Fassel. Mm-hmm. He had a great play marked up, and Johnny Hecker had a good arm on that 12-yard pass.
At some point, an NFL team, whether it's the Bills or just a really sorry team, is going to offer Johnny Hecker a quarterback starting position. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's going to get paid millions.
The dude has been money his whole career throwing the ball on those trick plays, and he's never had a bad throw yet in his career.
Yeah, 116 QBR this week.
And that throw was right on the money to Sam Shields. I mean, it was a huge throw. And, of course, like I said, and then right after halftime, the Rams just seemed like they had the momentum after the Saints scored a touchdown. It was just a kind of like after the Rams made it 20 to 17, excuse me. It just seemed like everything was going to go back and forth, back and forth. The Saints and Rams were just kind of punching blows.
Yeah, it was like a heavyweight boxing match, round and round.
Mm-hmm.
One round, Rams were up. Next round, we were tied, or the Saints were up, and yeah, it was just back and forth towards the end and stuff, and that's where the anxiety and the stressfulness kicked in for both of us and my family when we were watching it.
Mm-hmm. And so many times, so the Rams ended up going 23-20, and it seemed like they left too much time off the clock, right? It seemed like they were, you know, it was they set the table for a breeze comeback down, you know, fast-forwarding into the fourth quarter. There was less than 2 minutes left. There was a little bit more, less than 4 minutes left. And then the Saints drive down really quickly. Looks like they're going to about to score a touchdown. Of course, then everyone thinks about the no call that just, you know, the huge no call that we can't go without talking about. The no call on the pass interference on the third down. And they end up sending for a field goal instead of a touchdown, which is huge because now the game is tied and it goes into overtime. But, of course, Saints fans are going to cry about what happened, and the whole game was poorly officiated, but we can talk about that play. I mean, it was
There was a lot of plays where the Rams had no calls and you didn't hear them talking about it. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember there was a play where it was like third down, I believe, and Goff was running towards the end zone and they face masked him or something, and they didn't call a penalty. If that could have easily been first down, first and goal on the one, and we could have had a touchdown there, but we had to settle for a field goal. And then I remember on the dumb pass to Cooks, that amazing pass Goff threw. Cooks got a little face mask on it too.
Yeah, the 36 yarder, right?
And they didn't call that one either. So it's like, I feel like at the end of the day, it's playoff football.
Yeah.
Officiating and the refs are going to let them play a little more because I know it's more competitive towards the end of the year.
Mm.
And it ended up like not being like a lot of plays, a lot of big plays in the game didn't get called and stuff. And
it sucks
that the last one was ended up being like the huge one. But at the same time, it's like, they could have scored.
There were so many.
Yeah, they had a bunch of red zone drives and they settled for field goals where they could have honestly put the game away, but they didn't. And then we went to overtime and they had the interception. And shout out John Johnson. He had the great interception on that deflection.
On his back.
On his back, probably had the whole world quiet for those few seconds when he caught that.
Mm-hmm. The whole Superdome probably. Yeah, the whole Superdome.
After that catch, it was silent.
Yeah. Going back to the officiating really quick, I really hope the officiating crew is not in the Super Bowl because that was just, there were so many missed calls. There was times when we were watching Drew Brees hiking the ball when the play clock had zero.
Yeah, the play clock.
And there was a play where Ndamukong Suh literally got up, stood straight up. He got up from his 3-point stance, pointing at the clock, like, hey, look, it's a zero, double zeros, like, call it delay of game. I don't know if the crowd noise was getting to them and the referees couldn't, like, think right or something, but there were so many missed calls, like you said, from the face mask. There was a few offsides where the Saints players were lined up a little bit offsides and they went on call too. So to blame it on one bad penalty, it doesn't make sense, Saints fans. Like, they need to grow up. Like, the game was filled with bad calls. It sucks that one happened so late and it was very blatant, but I don't know. I think they're overreacting for sure. There were so many bad calls in the game. And at the end of the day, football is football. You're right. They had their opportunities. They had their opportunities to definitely steal away the game. They just didn't happen to do so.
Yeah, definitely. They had a lot of chances, a lot of opportunities. Like, at the end of the day, there's a lot of teams that have been screwed over officiating these last couple playoffs. Like, I know the Cowboys with a Dez catch, and then many others.
Raiders, Tuck rule,
The Raiders, Tuck rule.
They made a whole ass rule that never happened again for the, the Patriots and Tom Brady.
Yeah, and then there's a lot of teams that, like, start off on a good start with, like, 14-0 scores, 21-0 scores. Falcons, when they were up,
28-3
in the Super Bowl, and they blew that.
Never forget.
At the end of the day, it's football. Like, you're never going to know what's going to happen, or you should never give up on your team, especially when they're, like, down 13-0
and stuff.
That's why I was, like, I kind of wanted to panic, but at the same time, I kind of understood, like, there's still, like, 3 quarters to play. Like, you never know what could happen, and it ended up being a ball game.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to talk too much about the Chiefs game, but the Chiefs and the Rams are similar in the aspect where they're kind of like the Warriors in the NFL. They're never out of it because their offense is so explosive. They could just score, score, score like that. And like the Chiefs did it in their game against the Patriots when they were kind of down and out. And the Rams were able to do it against the Saints when they're kind of looked down and out. And they're able to get back into the game relatively quickly because they have such a high-powered offense and so many weapons. Rewinding it back to the overtime, what was your reaction when they did the whole coin toss and the Saints won the toss and they got the ball? What did you think that was going to happen there?
At the beginning, I was worried because I thought Drew Brees was just going to drive and put the game away because he's one of the best quarterbacks like I've seen in my life and stuff. And but at the same time, like I called it when we were watching it, I was all like, we need that pick.
Yeah.
I have a feeling we're going to get that pick, hopefully a pick six. And I forgot who deflected the pass. I think it was Dante Fowler.
Yeah, it was Dante Fowler
Jr. He deflected the pass, and I was like, there it is. And then John Johnson caught it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, can't believe they did it. But, after that, the sort of anxiety kind of went away.
Yeah.
And then the stress came when
Legatron.
Yeah, when Legatron came out. But, that was crazy, and I couldn't even watch that.
That was so stressful because if he missed the field goal, the Saints would have been, like, right there.
Yeah.
You mean they would have needed one first down, and then they could have kicked the field goal.
Yeah.
So, like, it was a huge moment, and, like, props to Sean McVay. Props to, like, Greg Zuerlein for just being a beast. But yeah, any like you said, that interception, the Breeze only had one interception, but it came at a huge like time, like, and it was a huge momentum flip for the Rams. John Johnson, like, shout out to him. Like, he was kind of quiet, but he had a huge interception and coming up with that on his back. I mean, that was a truly spectacular play. I like
the Saints celebration after, too.
Yeah? Oh, yeah.
Copying a...
The little revving the motorcycle, revving the chopper, yeah.
Revving the chopper.
Of course. And in football, there's a lot of... You got to have that, you know, mojo. You got to have...
That swagger.
Yeah, you got to have that swagger and be able to get back at someone who was trying to, you know... Even Marcus Peters at the end of the game, but that's a whole other conversation. But yeah, then, of course, Greg Zuerlein hit that that field goal to put the game ahead and... You know, Greg Zuerlein, he has something about his kicks where he kicks it with a little, like, you know, has a little curve to it. A little
finesse.
Yeah, a little finesse. And definitely, especially the one that sent it to overtime. It's
like a soccer kick.
Yeah, it's like a soccer kick. It kind of tails out before it goes back in.
Well, I think he uses soccer cleats, I think.
Oh, of course. Most kickers do. It just, man, seeing some of those, you thought they were going to go out, and then all of a sudden they tailed back in.
The last one was the worst one.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. I think,
it was the first one.
My bad. OT. I messed up. It was the first one in... The fourth quarter to tie it.
Mm-hmm.
Or to take the lead.
No, it was to tie it, yeah.
Yeah, it was to tie it.
Yeah.
Definitely, it was to tie it. I remember that one. Yeah, that one was really sketchy. Because when he first kicked it, it was on the right side of the goal post.
Yeah,
and then it curved in. Curved left in, like, literally, like, probably, like, 3 seconds before I got there.
Yeah.
And it's, I was just like, oh, my God.
It's pretty remarkable how they could do that stuff at such a high level. So at the end of the game, you know, we have had time to dissect and watch the highlights and different stuff. But who's your MVP of the Rams victory?
Honestly, my MVP for this past conference game, I honestly got to go with Greg the Leg.
Hey, all right.
Greg the Leg Zuerlein.
Kickers are people too.
Yeah, he had two of the most amazing field goals and most important field goals in, I think, Rams history. With that tying one in the fourth quarter and then the... game-winning 57-yarder in a really loud stadium, probably one of the loudest stadiums in the league.
Oh, for sure.
And to have cold blood like that, ice in his veins, go through his body, and just come up with that huge kick.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I couldn't even watch it, but I'm glad it went in.
Yeah. For me, I got to go Brandon Cooks. Going against his former team. You were talking about it, too, on the first show. Where, you know, he's going to have a big game against his former opponent, and he did. You know, 7 receptions, 107 yards, no touchdowns, but he averaged 15 and a half yards a catch. And he had, it seemed like in the third and fourth quarter, when Goff and the Rams needed these huge moments, he was the one who was getting targeted. Him and Goff stepped up, especially in the last couple of drives. They connected on that 36-yard pass. I think it was
10-3.
Yeah. 13-3, yeah.
It was 13-3 when Goff threw that dumb pass on that clutch third down.
Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of big moments where Cooks came up big for Goff, and that was huge because you knew without Cooper Kupp, you saw Josh Reynolds drop a few balls. Even Todd Gurley dropped a few balls.
Yeah.
But holy shit, like, you know, Brandon Cooks came when he needed to, and like, props.
It was nice seeing Higbee and Everett.
Yeah, getting the tight ends involved.
Mm-hmm. Really didn't see that too much during the regular season, but glad to see that he's using his tight ends more.
Mm-hmm. And on the defensive side, the Rams did really good. They only limited the Saints to 10 second half points. Who's your defensive MVP of the game?
My defensive MVP has got to be, honestly, Corey Littleton.
Yeah.
Because at the beginning of the game, I know they had him on some messed up matchups. With Alvin Kamara, and he was getting burned and stuff. And usually some of those players don't bounce back from that. Like, they get frustrated and... they don't really come back from that game and stuff the same. But it was nice seeing him settle down and then come up big in the second half, having 12 tackles overall all game. That was nice to see and stuff. And he's a Pro Bowler.
Yeah.
Sucks he's not going to play in the Pro Bowl, but I think I prefer the Super Bowl over the Pro Bowl.
So. I think he does too, man. He's had a quietly good year for the Rams. Yeah. Like, in the middle, like being an inside linebacker is a hard position.
I think he's the most improved player out of
the whole league. On the right, dude, especially on the Rams, and then, the whole league, he definitely is in the argument. For me, I got to go Ndamukong Suh. You know, we were talking about it before the show, that he's kind of had a quiet regular season, you know, like, it just seemed like he kind of disappeared a little bit. It seemed like maybe the age, he's pretty old, so age is maybe getting to him, and then he showed up.
He showed up in the Dallas game. And then showed up in this past game.
So it seemed like he was saving his best play for the playoffs.
Yeah.
And that's huge for the Rams because they need that, those pass rush. He got to Breeze for 1.5 sacks. So he was huge in forcing that pressure. I mean, there was that one cool clip where, like, Breeze was throwing off his back foot and, like, Sue just barely touched him.
Yeah,
he pushed him. Yeah, he shoved him, but, like, Breeze went flying because this dude's 6 foot only. So, you know, it just showed the strength of the Ndamukong Suh, and he had some big moments, even making tackles behind the line of scrimmage.
It's nice seeing the defense, how they've been playing these last two games. Like,
huge.
Way more improvement from the regular season. Amazing.
Mm-hmm. And you knew a veteran team like them, they could turn it around.
Yeah,
like, you know, definitely. Like the same thing the Spurs do or the Patriots do. There's more veteran team, they wait for the playoffs to do. They know,
like,
something.
I would admit, at the beginning of the year, I was kind of like sketched out, kind of worried and stuff, but... For some reason, I always knew, like, towards the end, like, I feel like with all that money they invested in that defense, I feel like that defense would show out towards the end of the year. And it's nice seeing them all healthy and, like, meshing together and stuff and seeing their potential at their finest moment right now.
So I wanted to go maybe a most disappointing player, but we'll just talk about Todd Gurley first because, you know, he really didn't play. And it seemed obviously like... You know, the team wasn't going to report any injury on him because they wanted to keep that a secret. But obviously something was bugging him. What do you think the reason why he didn't play for most of the, you know, quarters?
I honestly think it was probably the drop passes and the... I think it was like the tip ball and they intercepted it. I think they just wanted him to settle down from that. I think he was probably just like frustrated about that and stuff and just wanted like a little breather and stuff. And it was nice seeing like CJ Anderson coming in a couple snaps and like rushing the ball and stuff and taking like some of the workload off of Gurley. But at the same time, I kind of think like maybe there might be like something bothering him. But overall, like looking at him on the field, like I saw him on the bike and running around and like talking and laughing. I think he was just honestly like probably just trying to relax from those mistakes.
Yeah, that's a smart move by McVay, because in the last series when it mattered most, he was in that possession. But for such a long time, he was out, and you know, hopefully he's not injured. We hope that he's not injured for the Super Bowl either, because he's like he's like the best running back, or one of the best running backs in the NFL right now.
Yeah, but it was nice seeing him score the touchdown after the first couple missed catches and drop passes and stuff. So yeah, it was nice seeing them. Yeah, but I honestly don't think there's anything wrong with Gurley. I think he's fine. But yeah, it's good for him to rest these next 2 weeks and stuff before this big game and stuff. So hopefully he'll be healthy and show out.
And retouching on last week's show, we spoke on some of what are the things that Rams had to do and what did they need to stop. Michael Thomas was a big emphasis point for you. And, you know, the Rams secondary was able to do so. They held Michael Thomas to only 4 receptions and 36 yards. They really kept him in check, and that kind of slowed Breeze a little bit. Obviously, the pressure helped too from Sue, Donald, and some of those guys. But really, Breeze didn't look the best Breeze as possible. And huge props to shutting down Michael Thomas and that pass rush for getting to him.
Definitely. I liked how our secondary played, and especially the second half when they were locking Michael Thomas down. I knew he had a couple of good catches the first quarter and stuff. And yeah, I said last week that was key for them to stop him. If they stopped him, I honestly thought they had a shot, and they definitely had a chance when they locked him up.
And then what do you make of Goff, captain? We talked about it, that he needs to have a big game. He's looked sloppy on the road this year, especially against the better teams like the Chicago Bears and some of the other teams that he faced. But this past week in the NFC Championship, 25 of 40, 297 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. But he was, you know, what did you think of overall performance?
Overall, I liked how he came back from that rocky start towards the beginning with the pick and all that stuff. And yeah, I liked how he settled down and like handled the pressure. And even without the experience of playing in a conference championship game, like he showed no signs of like nervousness and just settled down and handled that really loud stadium.
Yeah, you saw so many times, especially in the first half, he had to walk over sometimes all the way to receivers. faces, helmets to, you know, players, the coaches, and it was just so loud. I thought by the end of the half, you know, he was going to go deaf and he was just going to give up, or I don't know. He battled through that, and I think that's huge, like especially for a young player to be able to overcome that, because Mercedes-Benz Superdome is no easy place to play. And Jared Goff, like you said, he had that bad start. You know, he had the interception, and a lot of times that could deflate a quarterback when you're on the road, you're young, and then you're in the playoffs. But no, he was able to, you know, rewrite the ship, and was able to lead the Rams essentially back to victory. He was huge.
He was having, like, problems with his helmet. Mm-hmm. I saw that the first couple quarters and stuff. Like, they were working on it and stuff. And then I even saw him talking to, like, his linemen, like, ear to ear and stuff. Mm-hmm. And even telling receivers where to be. And, yeah, I honestly think, like, the rocky start was just because they had communication problems and malfunctionings with the helmets and, like, the microphones. Mm-hmm. But it was good seeing Goff, like, not letting that get to him and having to, like, overcome that, and then finally, like, handling the crowd and all the pressure.
That proved to me that game and the ability to overcome all that. I think that proved to me that Goff is going to be, like, a next-generation superstar. I mean, for the most part, when we grew up, we had Brady, we had Breeze, we had Peyton Manning and some of the other guys that were great in our era. I think it's, you know, the new wave of cats are going to come in, and these new generation of kids are going to grow up with other names that they're familiar to that are at the top of the game, top of the league, when the guys that we grew up with are out. And I think Goff, he's definitely going to stick around with the likes of Mahomes and some other dudes we can talk about another time for another show. But I think that proved him it. To be on the road, to play in a tough environment like New Orleans, and to be able to, you know, communicate properly with your teammates and make those perfect throws, that was huge. I think Jared Goff's going to be a great one for a long time.
I think Goff is an elite quarterback now. He's probably top five now in the league, definitely, with his last performances and stuff. And honestly, like, I remember, like, at the beginning of the year, like, when the power rankings came out for quarterbacks, they didn't even have Goff in, like, the top 16.
Yeah, that's a joke. And throughout
the year, they didn't even talk about him or how he was playing and stuff. And then it's finally glad, like, he's stepping up, like, in the biggest stage when the whole world's watching and having these big games and stuff, and now having probably a household name around the world somewhere.
And a lot of the argument for that, too, is, oh, he's in Sean McVay's system, and it's the system instead of him. But I think he's proving that, especially this year, he's proving that time and time again. Because there's been times where, you know, he's had to improvise or something doesn't go right, but he improvised and he makes some really nice throws this whole season. And then, of course, in the playoffs against the Saints in a hostile environment, it definitely showed that, you know, he's not just a system quarterback. He's smart. I think Sean McVay just lets him be smart at the fullest potential, kind of like you saw with, like, guys like Peyton Manning and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really fun to watch. So, yeah, the Rams beat the Saints, you know, 26-23. It was fun recapping that game with you. Next week, we're gonna have a Super Bowl show.
We'll have a Super Bowl show next week. Super Bowl
prediction show.
Please stay tuned. Mm-hmm. We're going to have that one, and it's going to be lit.
It's going to be exciting. It's going to be so fun. I mean, like you said, the Super Bowl is way better than the Pro Bowl, so I'm glad the Rams, you know, and then their players
are going to have that Super Bowl party at my house. Might have some fans stop by.
Yeah?
They let us know they want to come. We're going to have a Super Bowl party at my house.
Of course. A big shout-out again to the Pulse Podcast Network for putting on this on their website, so you can check us out on there. Also check us out on SoundCloud, Spotify. We'll be on Apple Podcasts soon too. We're getting that in the works. But yeah, thanks again, Javier Lopez. I'm Noah Alvarez.
I'm Javi.
And we signing out.
Peace out.